Shomrabyug.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Asher Look! Asher Listen, the podcast taking a pop at culture.
Sure look, sure listen.
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 Oh, very good, Benjamin. You've accidentally recreated me, Vihil, everyone's favourite podcast character. But sure, look it, we don't have time to be doing all this patty wackery because we've got loads of things to be looking at, including a fucking shite week for Marvel down the old content mines and three whole new trailers, including Breathe, Rebel Moon 2, Electric Rebel Moon, and the Crow trailer, which doesn't really have anything new that we didn't talk about when we saw the pictures last week, but I guess there's a trailer now, so we'll have a little chat about that. And, Benjamin, if that is your real name, Osquelga, you've seen Delicious in Dungeon, and I've no idea what that is.
Sure, listen, Michael, if that wasn't enough, and it's not for a bloody weekly pop culture podcast, we're also going to be taking a look at In Honour of the Day That's In It, and the reason we've resurrected Vihil from the grave.
Hello, it's me.
Hauled him out of the bogs up there, where we preserve
I've
all the best
the
things.
Bogs. There's all bog in me.
Yeah, inside him. It's because it was Paddy's Day there yesterday, Michael, because Ben can't read a calendar and should have put this episode last week on the running order.
That would have made more sense. So we got
mileage out of it. Now here we are, Michael. Here we are.
This is where we're at. Just very early for next year's Paddy's Day. Benjamin, speaking of having bits of bog stuck in you, awful day for Marvel.
Terrible day for the Marish, which is what I'm calling the Marvel Parish from now on.
Very good, Benjamin. Now, you, not as much as I, but I, much more than you, have been very much looking forward to X-Men 97, the revival of the classic Fox animated X-Men series.
It's because you're a nerd.
I mean, you've absolutely stumped me there, Benjamin. Isn't that the whole concept of this?
Hang on, which podcast am I doing this week? Is this my weekly misogyny podcast, or is it my poetry podcast, or is it the other one?
No, this is the other one. This is the original one. This isn't the misogyny one. This isn't soggy cornflakes.
Oh, I thought this was Tater Tots, the Andrew Tate fancast. Oh, okay.
Tater Tots, the Andrew Tate fancast for children. That's an amazing idea.
Love nerds. Great bunch of lads. Great bunch of lads.
Except Benjamin, apparently, Bo from Mayo, the creative lead of the X-Men 97 show, who has been unceremoniously let go by Marvel.
Yes, he's been cast aside, Michael. This is not anything unusual. Marvel has a bit of a burn and churn policy when it comes to certain creatives, Michael. They'll use you up and then they'll gently push you out in a boat and then set fire to you using a flaming arrow from the shoreline. Like the Vikings used to, Michael. It's not uncommon.
Right, go on.
Michael, I don't think I told people what the topic of today was. I think I just told them it was a Paddy's Day special.
You did. You did.
Did
it's too late now.
Good. It's too late. Very good. Very good. You'll just have to guess, ladies and gentlemen. Stick around. See what happens.
Yeah. But see what happens.
What's unusual here, Michael, is that it's before his show has even dropped.
Just a couple of days before, very sadly for him.
Yeah. So this is interesting. He's quite popular, Michael. He's worked on a few things with Marvel. He has worked on Moon Knight, which, let's be honest, Michael, wasn't great.
That wasn't great. What else has he worked on?
Great.
Inspire my confidence a little bit more, Ben.
You want a little bit more confidence, do you, Michael?
Yeah. I'd love if you could inspire my confidence a little bit.
Well, the primary reason that he was kind of... he's also worked on The Witcher, Michael, for Netflix, which also actually turned out...
That turned out great, didn't it, famously?
Yeah. All right. Okay, maybe... Maybe... Maybe not.
Benjamin, my concern muscle is twitching.
Yeah, there's probably a bit of concern there, Michael. Sorry, I've just realised that. Actually, maybe not that big a deal. But look, the rumour mill is spinning, Michael, because this has happened. And
it's going wild. It's going way more wild than there's any need for the rumour mill to go about the lead creative of a cartoon being sacked. But because it's such a high-profile cartoon, among other things, and because he's such a high-profile creative, it's just everyone and their sister has an idea about why he might have been sacked. And is it because he showed his willy on OnlyFans?
It seems to be that, Michael. So his Instagram account went down unceremoniously at the same time. So he was let go. He shared one cryptic kind of tweet on X or Twitter about silence is golden, you know, and that was it. But we've heard other things now that his behavior was a little bit difficult while he was working. And then some stuff came to light about him using OnlyFans. So he ran a free OnlyFans account, Michael, where he, in fairness, all he released, Michael, was non-explicit content, according to the people that checked into this. He had also finished his work on the second season of X-Men 97.
This is all
and
very...
And pitched his third season.
This is all very good for confidence, isn't it? Because one of the best things, one of the best signs that everything's going well is an absolute last-second firing of a creative.
Yeah, someone else has said, or another insider has said, Michael, that he was an absolute nightmare to work with on a daily basis, and that Disney's executives found the showrunner to be creepy. Now, I don't know what, first of all, pot kettle black in that case, Michael.
You know, Disney executives finding you creepy might just mean you're a living human.
Oh, how do we monetize it? And they just poke you until you give out money. But look, we can neither defend nor condemn here, Michael, because we don't know.
It's none of our business, likely. But my biggest concern about it isn't why he was fired, or it's the repercussions of the firing and the absolute lack of confidence that someone who doesn't have a great creative track record being sacked.
I wouldn't say
before.
Very
concerning.
Well, Michael, the good news is for the rest of the week things went pretty well for Marvel.
So what they did was they had a big creepy meeting where they got all the creepiest men in the company together. And several of the creepiest women, no doubt, like that woman who was burning out what were they called? Artists. Victoria
artists.
Something.
What are those things called before we had AI?
You know them, the ones who make the things. They make the programs in the practical terms of actually making it, not just
making it happen.
Yeah, not just green lighting it. Anyway, Benjamin, they've cancelled a lot of Marvel shit. Not a surprise among them. But what I'm going to ask you to do is hyperbolically overreact when I tell you what the three films that they've cancelled are.
Okay, would you like a gruff kind of spit take quality reaction, or would you like a shocked woman finding out their husband isn't coming home from the war?
Benjamin, you have fun with it. I'll tell you what films are cancelled. I'll tell you what films aren't happening, and you just react as you would naturally at how shocking this news is.
Okay.
Anyway, the first film that isn't happening, Eternals 2.
Oh, I've just choked on my Subway sandwich, Michael, that I was mid-bite into. Oh, my God, what?
Did we get that Subway sandwich sponsorship this week?
No, but that's why I choked on it. Subway, choke on it.
Because it's horrible. Yeah, choke on it. It's dry and gross. Anyway, Eternals 2, no one to no one's surprise. No more Harry Styles. Also, Benjamin, now this one is truly shocking.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is out of nowhere. Ant-Man 4.
Who will tell the boys?
Which the boys don't care about. And then the last one, speaking of the boys not caring, provably, the last one is Captain Marvel 3.
I'll get you for this.
Oh, very good. Anyway, look, no surprises there. The last three of all of those were, they were, in the order that I revealed them, not very good, kind of rubbish, and I don't really even remember.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, Ant-Man 4 was never going ahead for several reasons. Eternals 2, I didn't even realise had been posited as a possible idea, Michael. Mm. In this old world of ours. But look, it's fine. You know, projects probably weren't even... probably hadn't even taken a run-up yet, Michael, so it's probably grand.
Remember Angelina Jolie and Barry Keoghan were heading off into space to find the rest of their mates?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the Keoghan fella off into space.
He was in it. He was off in space in the nude.
Yeah, Harry Styles was there.
Harry Styles was there, and he was like, oh, right, that's it's me, it's Harry Styles.
Yeah, I guess Disney probably felt that a cosmic superhero whose power was having sex with you. It might be a bit on the nose for the creepy Disney executive.
Yeah, well, creepy Disney executives don't like to hear about humans having sex. Benjamin!
They heard about... They heard about Star Fox's OnlyFans. I'm like, I'm not doing
that. Yeah, oh, get him bloody off here. Get him cancelled. Get him cancelled this bloody minute. Benjamin, though, look. For every bit of Marvel, Marvel's not doing great news we have. There's no need to worry, because there's generic sci-fi action films coming out.
Oh, like what, Michael?
Like 2024's Breathe.
No, I am breathing. You just tell me what the movie is.
I wasn't giving you an instruction, Benjamin. That's the name of the film. The film is called Breathe. And the
Michael,
main
I am breathing.
This...
Would you stop just telling me the name of the movie?
I see what you're doing there. Because you have to breathe, Ben. Take a deep one in. Now just hold that and I'll do the rest of the podcast. So Mila Jovovich, she's back.
Very good.
But this time, she's in an orange film. Benjamin, Mila Jovovich is always in orange films.
Michael, Mila Jovovich found the colour orange very young and said, that's how I'd like to be represented on screen from here to eternity.
I only want to be in orange films from now on. But the twist of this one is Mila Jovovich seems to be the baddie.
Oh, Michael. She's a bit of a white nationalist telling the black people that they can't breathe.
Is that what it is, do you reckon?
Nah. It looks to be a classic Will Smith is trapped inside while the vampires come to get us. It looks to be a classic bit of, here, John Krasinski, would you ever wish so the big spookly alien fellas can't come in and get us? Oh, Emily Blunt, could you have your pregnancy a bit quieter, please, so they don't come in and get us?
Yeah. Well, the thing, though, Ben, here, the difference seems to be is this is just your commoner garden, the humans have ruined the Earth film. It doesn't seem to be aliens or spaceships.
No, it doesn't.
It's just we've run out of oxygen because we were bad eggs. And now, it was just the worst. We're really learning from movies over the last 5 years that humans are just the worst. And the sooner the better Earth gets rid of us, then we're really going to be in a good spot.
Yeah. Just leave a few podcasters to chart the whole thing and we'll be grand.
Yeah. Mila Jovovich can come. We'd let Mila Jovovich in and we'd let her have access to the podcasting machine so she could finish doing her own podcast.
Yeah, and every orange item of clothing we own as per her contract.
As per her contract. So, Benjamin, look, Jennifer Hudson's in this.
Why?
I don't know. Is she any good? She was in...
I've never seen Jennifer Hudson act.
Have you not? Have you ever seen her in a film?
No. No, I don't think so.
Was she in Dreamgirls? Was she good in that?
I don't know. I don't know. You have me at a complete disadvantage, Michael.
All right. Okay, well, she's doing a sci-fi now, so I guess that's big news.
Yeah, so Common is there. He dies at the start, by the looks of it.
Oh, I'll tell you what, though, Benjamin. That's a classic, or does he?
Or does he? Or does he? Let me in and I'll show you your husband who I kidnapped and tortured in a basement in my little settlement.
Yeah. Or let me in and I'll show you your husband who's actually in on it with me.
Dun, 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 dun.
I think that's going to be the twist, Benjamin.
Oh, he was in it all along. Maybe they're clones, Michael, and he's using them like hamsters to experiment on.
Or maybe there's no oxygen and he has a machine that'll do a big oxygen for you.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what they explicitly state in the trailer, Michael, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's basically just a siege film.
Oh, it's a classic siege film, Michael.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of those these days.
We do, Michael. We get loads of them. What about Will Smith is scared of vampires? What about that?
That was 25 years ago.
Was it 25 years, Michael?
No, it wasn't. But it was a long
I'd believe
time
you
ago.
If you told me it was. I'd believe
well,
you.
Well, it was long enough ago that there was a billboard in it for Batman versus Superman, and that seemed like a far future pipe dream.
Yep. Yep. Well, that's
and that film was ages ago.
25 years, Michael. Easy. Easy.
I'm gonna
25 years, easy.
2007. That's a good long time ago.
Yeah. That's a good long time ago, Michael. It's at least 15
yeah,
years ago.
Yeah, go on. Yeah, if
I'm,
not
I'm
more.
Terrible at math. I took the safest swing that I could take there, ladies and gentlemen, and I won't be doing any more.
It was close enough. Yeah. Anyway, look, I don't know if I'll go see this. Is it cinemas? Is it streaming? I don't know.
This will probably tell you how intrigued by this trailer I was, Michael, but one of the key things I took issue with was a bit at the end where it said, only in cinemas and on digital. That's not what only means.
They're the only options. What else is it going to be on? Projected on the cave wall?
What are you on about? What are you on about, lads?
Cinemas, digital. It's not going to be just beamed directly into our brains, is it? Although that would be digital, I suppose.
Yeah, so I mean, the whole concept, Michael, is just being stuck somewhere that you don't feel like you can breathe. Speaking of things that I have to experience and don't feel like I can breathe in.
Yes.
For some reason, Michael.
Yes?
Zack Snyder's at it again.
Well, is he at it again, or is this all part of the same overall scope of just being generally at it?
Well, yeah, he's just at it. And he hasn't stopped.
He's just at it. He's just at it. Rebel Moon Part 1 set that child on fire. Rebel Moon Part 1, the director's cut, a.k.a. Rebel Moon, but sexier. And then Rebel Moon Part 2, what's it called? The Scar
Don't you dare put that child out. Yes.
Yeah. He's done. He's cooked. And then Rebel Moon, the inevitable Rebel Moon Part 2, the director's cut. That child is cooked. And then the inevitable Rebel Moon combined cut and the inevitable Rebel Moon combined director's cut, Benjamin. They're all just one big project, let's be honest.
Oh, it's no fucking good, man. Look, we got a trailer for this. The one thing I will say here, Michael.
Go on.
Is Sofia Boutella came out about a week ago now, and she said she'd been very psychologically harmed by the negative reaction to the film.
Oh no, poor Sofia Boutella. She's always flipping around the place and kicking people.
So what I want to say, kicking off this review, Sofia, if you're listening, and it sounds like you might be, because you said you listen to a lot of reviews, so just in case.
Right, go on.
It's not personal, Sofia. We have an issue with the man who made the movie, not yourself.
I don't have an issue with Zack Snyder. Zack Snyder's never done anything to anyone. What's your issue with Zack Snyder?
Hang on. He started a competing podcast to us called Your Fake Shereisht.
Yeah, well, that's just cultural appropriation, Snyder. Zack Snyder hasn't done anything to anyone. Zack Snyder seems to be a perfectly pleasant and relatable normal man.
No, he took my last Rolo, Michael. I was 7 years old. I was in Tymon Park Playground.
Oh yeah, where are you?
Yeah, and a large muscular man in a t-shirt that was one size too small,
just one,
came up to me and he said, what do you think of CGI?
Oh yeah.
And I was 7 at the time, Michael, and I said, I don't know what that is, sorry. I'd love to know what that is, but I have not a clue. And he said, well, you're no use to me. And he leaned down and took my last Rolo out of my hand and walked off and said, swings are shit anyway. And he strolled off into the distance.
You see, that's the funny thing. I can't see Zack Snyder doing that under any circumstances, Benjamin. He seems like a perfectly reasonable man. The worst thing I think you can say about him is that he's very enthusiastic about his own work and maybe a little bit delusional about the quality of his work.
He said that more people saw his film, Rebel Moon, than saw Barbie.
Yes, because he was on the Joe Rogan podcast. And Joe Rogan is nothing if not an enabler of people who want to talk about themselves. And
it's a great place for facts.
Great place for
Joe
facts.
Rogan podcast.
Yeah. And Zack Snyder came out with a figure of something like it has been viewed 73 million times or something like that. And then Netflix calculations say each view is actually 3 or 4 people or something. But it doesn't take into account if they actually watched the damn thing.
I never got past the fucking breaking the griffin scene.
Did you not? I thought you watched the whole thing. You did a review on it.
I know, yeah. I watched the scenes, Michael, out of order, but I didn't sit down and watch the entire Netflix thing. I couldn't do it.
Classic
review. I couldn't do it. We can admit that now, Michael. Look, coming to this podcast, Michael, for insightful analysis of pop culture is like coming to Joe Rogan for facts on vaccines. It's just not going to work out for you.
Right? Benjamin.
It's not going to work out.
Shut up anyway, because Zack Snyder seems like a personally perfectly reasonable fella who's a bit delusional. These films are rubbish. Let's not get that wrong.
Awful.
These films are absolutely awful, and they're badly written, and they're badly ideated, and they're badly casted, and they're badly acted. Sofia Boutella is rubbish in these.
Yes.
But Sofia Boutella is no more of an innocent victim in this than Zack Snyder is. They've made not great films. But they have enough of an audience that they keep getting away with it.
Those sons of bitches. Michael, we got a trailer for this one. And in this one, the farmers get revenge, by the looks of it.
Yeah, so this one is basically the Secret Seven. No, that's not what I mean. The Seven Samurai. It's the Newmont that we were promised in the first one. In the first one, they went and got the gang to defend the farm.
Yep.
And now they're going to defend the farm.
Very good. Yeah.
Just a couple of people against an entire intergalactic empire, but they're going to do it somehow, I imagine.
Yeah. Well, Hopkins Bob makes that point very clear. He says, oh, you know you can't win.
Because I'm from Space Wales.
I'm from Space Wales. The best damn place in the galaxy, as you know. But yeah, look, I don't know if I'm very excited to watch this, Michael.
Well, look, it turns out you didn't watch the first one after all that, so I'll have to watch it for us, I suppose.
I don't think we're even going to waste an episode on it, Michael. To be honest, I don't think that's going to happen. Speaking of things we won't waste an episode on, Michael.
Are we? Okay, right, we're flying here.
Oh, you want to talk more about it? You've got more to say?
I was going
to
say, did you see the fellow with the lightsaber, Ben? He was just waiting for his turn. He let all his mates get shot.
Oh, yeah.
What an asshole.
Yeah, you shouldn't do that. You should probably jump in before you let the antagonist against your party shoot everybody in the face.
Yeah, don't let Sofia Boutella kill all your mates. Give them a dig out.
Ed Skein is back.
Ed Skein?
He pulled out of a cocoon.
Well, he got sent across the universe and revived last time. So
he did, yeah. No. I remember. I watched the film.
You watched it, famously. You watched it. So it makes sense that he's back in a sense, because it's actually the same film. It's not really part two.
Yeah, it's not really part two. It's just part one.
It's just part one with a little bit extra.
It's just a little bit extra tacked on there at the end. Look, the special effects look decent.
Yeah, well,
they're grand.
Yeah, they're very good. Look, their special effects are very good. It's a hodgepodge of mad shit that has just been put together into barely a film. People will watch it. People will put it on the background. I think Zack Snyder's delusional to think that more people have seen this than Barbie. But also, everyone who went to Barbie paid to go and see Barbie. They weren't already paying for Netflix. And they put it on and said, will we watch 5 minutes of this?
That's it. And to which Netflix went, that's a full watch.
That's a full watch. Take that, Barbie.
Full fucking watch.
Anyway, let's move on.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you like this kind of smooth analysis, both of directors' personalities and the movie business as a whole, you can just do us a favour and go down there and give us a review wherever you listen.
Give us an L review. And leave Zack Snyder alone. He seems like a good sort.
No, he stole my last Rolo. If you think that Zack Snyder stole my last Rolo, give us a 5-star review. If you think he's an alright bloke and he's probably grand, give us a 5-star review. Just do it no matter which way it goes there, ladies and gentlemen. It would really help us out. We've got 13 now, Michael. Exciting times.
Very exciting, Benjamin. Giving us a 5-star review would also help Sofia Boutella.
Because we'd probably leave her alone.
Nothing against Sofia Boutella. Just rubbish in that film.
Nothing. Not one thing.
Seems like a perfectly...
She never stole any of my confectionaries as a child.
Yeah, she seems like a perfectly fine actress, but not in this.
No, probably not, no.
No. Anyway, Benjamin, speaking of backlash against middling projects, The Crow got a trailer, and the reaction has actually been quite positive.
Yeah, it looks fine.
Yeah.
It looks grand.
The main reaction that we're seeing on the internet seems to be, okay, The Crow is back. This time he's a skinny emo boy. Or a skinny... Ben, what's he called?
He was always a skinny emo boy.
He wasn't. He was a goth, wasn't he? He was just a full-on goth.
Michael, in an attempt to garner internet points by controversy, what's the difference?
I don't know. I think goths were earlier.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right.
I only know in terms of time periods. And emos replaced goths.
Did they?
Or goths evolved into emos. But I don't know. Look at me. Look at what I look like. Do you think I've ever had a conversation even with an emo slash goth?
Michael used to steal all goths' last Rolos. That was his...
I didn't, Benjamin. I just stayed away from them. I left them. They had their Green Day and their Foo Fighters. And I left them alone for the most... They had their The Cure and their Robert Smith. And I just left them. They had their... what did emos like, Ben?
Fallout Boy.
They had their Arcade Fire. I don't know now. I'm just
Consternation at the Cotillion. Oh, sorry. Yeah, Panic at the Disco. Panic at the Disco. Yeah, sorry.
They had all of that stuff, and I just left them to it.
Yeah. Michael used to hang around Temple Bar, ladies and gentlemen. Central Bank was where all the goths kind of flocked to back in the day. And he used to hang around, and he'd wait for one of them to leave their skateboards on a 10, and he'd just pick it up and walk off. What should he do?
I don't know if skaters are goths, Ben. I think they're different subcultures that you've mixed together.
It's all the same to me, Michael. It's all the same to me.
Anyway, so we don't know what subculture Eric Draven in the new The Crow trailer identifies with.
Fuckboy with an eye.
Is he a fuckboy, you reckon?
With an eye.
Okay. He's a fuckboy with an eye. But he's fallen in love in this.
Yes, with FKA Twigs.
Which is, you know, that's something.
Michael, it just looks a bit like John Wick, if John Wick shopped at Hot Topic.
I think John Wick might shop at Hot Topic, though, Ben.
He might just, yeah. Look, there's only so many classic kind of Orpheus and Eurydice revenge feel thrillers you can go on, Michael, before you're kind of like, yeah, all right, I get it. It looks fun. Like, it looks grand.
It looks violent. It looks bloody.
Yeah, there's plenty of pew-pew.
The death of Eric and his girlfriend seems very unpleasant and upsetting, and I'm surprised of how much of it was in the trailer.
All of it, by the looks of it, Michael. We got a lot of that film in the trailer.
Yeah, well, that's true. We got, this is a classic, here's the film for you now, in the trailer. Yeah. But I don't know, I have a feeling that the death scene might be even more gross and horrific in the movie.
Which I don't want, Michael. I don't think I'm interested in that.
I don't, but all revenge films, Ben, all revenge pornography films, they really need you to get behind the person who's doing the big revenge.
Well, yes, because they're committing heinous acts of explicit violence.
Yeah, except John Wick, whose dog got killed in the first 20 minutes of the first one, and then we just cheered for him for another 400 minutes of killing people.
Completely justified. Justified cheering in my book.
Yeah, in your book of dog peril. But this it looks like the murder is going to be very upsetting and unpleasant.
Yeah, the classic plastic bag suffocation trope has always kind of sat awfully with me ever since I was a child. It just seemed like the worst possible way to be assassinated.
Yeah, famously that's how Zack Snyder killed your parents, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then he took their last Rolos. It was
he
a
took
whole
their
thing.
Last Rolos.
In Time and Park.
Yeah. Rolo is actually the name of Ben's younger brother. So
yeah.
This whole time that you thought he was talking about the sweet and the 90s advertisement, who would you give your last Rolo to? It was actually much more tragic and The Crow-like.
I mean, in fairness, my lost brother Rolo was my first and last Rolo, but you know, I didn't really explain that very well. Yeah.
I have a big question for you here. Do you think that Bill Skarsgård has got this ripped for this film? Or did he get this ripped for Boy Kills World? Or did he just line them all up and said, I'm going to do Ripped for 5 years, get as many in the can as I can, and then turn into my dad as Baron Harkonnen?
Oh, I think that's absolutely the latter there, Michael. The last option you've presented me is 100% what's happened there. I wouldn't be surprised if his agent went, look, steroids, leaves, and fucking... workouts. That's what you're going to have for the next 5 years. We'll get you everywhere. Everywhere. And then we'll see what we can do. Because he would have had to have some kind of reboot, Michael, post Pennywise.
Yes.
Because
he seems to be doing it very successfully.
Oh, no, he is. He's doing great. Bill's all right. The Skarsgårds in general, Alexander and Bill, they're all right. I'll watch them and stuff. Like, they're a good pair of lads. And even his big, spooky Harkonnen father is all right. I'll watch him in stuff, you know.
Very good.
Skarsgårds are all right.
Anyway, Benjamin, you are our resident anime expert. Have you seen any animes this week?
It's the worst segue we've had all episode. That's terrible. fucking awful. Michael, for the last couple of weeks, Netflix has been rolling out an episode a week of a fantastic little anime called Delicious in Dungeon.
Delicious in Dungeon. Now, that sounds a bit word salad-y to me, Ben, like you've just thrown together some random ideas.
That's exactly what I thought, Michael, when I came across Delicious in Dungeon. But come here to me, you and I, two great fans of Dungeons & Dragons, are we?
Oh, yeah. Now, I think it has its hits and misses, but go on.
Well, but we're a fan of the concept, at the very least.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in concept, great idea.
In concept, big fans.
Try to get a game together, Ben.
try to organize a game, Michael. It's like trying to organize a bloody orgy in a monastery. Rough stuff.
Now, pretty straightforward, I reckon. Trying to organise kobolds in a dairy farm.
Good man. Yeah, that was two tidy ones. Ladies and gentlemen, if you enjoy that kind of razor-sharp wordplay, leave us a review wherever you listen.
Don't. Let that fade down a bit and then do the review.
Come here to me. Delicious in Dungeon is based on the very, very, very popular manga, Michael, of the same name.
No, Benjamin, it was very popular. We would have heard of it, surely.
Oh, well, no, probably not, Michael, because we're no great fans of manga, are we?
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, we don't come through any of that kind of thing. So, you know, but it was created by a guy called Ryo... now, I could get this wrong, so I'm going to do my best here, Michael. Ryoko Kui is his name. He's an illustrator and writer, and he created this very wholesome kind of representation of Dungeons and Dragons. Now, there's no meta aspect to this, Michael, in the sense that it's not about a group of friends playing a campaign of Dungeons and Dragons. It's set inside a dungeon crawler style world.
Oh, so everyone's like, we're adventurers and we're going to this dungeon for treasure. What about it?
Exactly. Now, for anyone who's not 100% familiar, sometimes you'll hear that phrase turned around, Michael, or thrown around, a dungeon crawl, and it's a very particular scenario in RPGs, where the heroes enter into basically a labyrinth by any other name, which is called, naturally, the dungeon, okay? Mm. And they go around and they solve various riddles, traps... and they take on different monsters, and it's all about looting and building up your thing and planning it out. And originally, this kind of dungeon crawling style was about from the guy who came up with Dungeons and Dragons, Gary Gygax. He introduced a concept called solo dungeon adventures in 1975, and that's where it came from. And one of the most kind of acclaimed version of that in the last couple of years, Michael, is Gloomhaven. But it would have been a model for many, many popular games back in the day. Like, what's that one that you used to draw maps out to and try and figure out yourself?
That was Shining in the Darkness. But, I mean, yeah. The thing is, it's not just TTRPGs, and I wouldn't even consider Gloomhaven a TTRPG. Gloomhaven is a board game, essentially, just a very long...
Go on, tell me more.
Gloomhaven is just a very long, very feature-heavy combat board game. But dungeon crawlers... as a genre, Benjamin, they're everywhere, and they are among the most popular genres of fantasy and sci-fi entertainment. Your classics of the genre, like Warhammer Quest, Descent, these are all dungeon crawlers. Basically, you just get a group of heroes, usually a dwarf, an elf, a human, and a wizard, and you say...
Oh, so close.
Go on.
So close to Delicious in Dungeon.
Oh, yeah. Well, hold on. I'll guess. I reckon it's a dwarf, an elf, some sort of priest, and a fighter.
Oh, you're one off. Just give me one more.
Oh, do they have five? A ranger.
Yeah, sort of. He's a little trap solver. He's essentially a bit of a rogue. He's a halfling.
Oh, a little halfling rogue.
But that was very well done. Well done to you. So Delicious in Dungeon is a very wholesome variation on this. Essentially, it is... what happens is, Michael, it features around some very core characters in the anime. Now, I haven't read the manga, so I can only tell you about what happens in the anime. But what you have are four core characters. You have Senshi, the dwarf.
Oh, yeah.
You have Marcille, the elf.
Oh, yeah.
You have Chilchuk, who is the halfling kind of trap setter and rogue. And then you have Lausch, I can never get his name right, and he's the fighter. But they lose Lausch's sister to a red dragon. But the unique thing about this dungeon, Michael, is that when you die in the dungeon, there's a curse on the dungeon that ties the soul to the body. So if you die in the dungeon, all you have to do is heal the body and they come back. They're fine.
Oh, that's like every game of role-playing game ever done.
It's good, isn't it? It's good. It's a nice little meta thing on that. But come here to me. The twist here, Michael, is that in the very first episode, poor old Lausch's sister gets devoured. We start in medias res, Michael, and she gets devoured by the red dragon.
Oh, delicious.
Yeah, in dungeon. But what happens is, Michael, they can't get her back, so they can't heal her body because she's being digested by a big dragon. And her last action is to teleport them out of the dungeon to safety.
Oh no, they're going to have to go in and get her.
Exactly. So Lausch naturally wants to go back and get his sister immediately, to which the party says, no, we have to restock on food. We haven't got enough money for supplies. He starts talking about, you know, selling his armor. And then he comes up with a genius plan, Michael. He says, why don't we eat what we kill in the dungeon?
What if it's gross?
Exactly, Michael. And that's the peril they face. So Lausch, it turns out, is some kind of fetishistic, kind of exotic food hunter.
Oh, very good. He's a kind of Army Hammer type.
Yeah, and he's been trying for years, Michael, to eat what happens in the dungeon. Now he has the perfect excuse. He has to save his sister and he doesn't have time to restock the pantry, as it were. So he heads in there, where he meets the like-minded Senshi, Michael, who's a dwarf.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows how to cook everything in the dungeon.
Oh, this sounds very tasty.
So each episode, Michael, is based around the gang encountering a kind of a classic monster from a dungeon crawler bestiary.
Okay.
Yeah, like a kelpie.
Yeah, a slime. Do they do a slime?
There's a slime,
of course,
Michael.
Yeah, there has to be a slime. Is there a kobold bin?
Oh, there's one or two kobolds knocking around, Michael.
There would have to be, yeah. Is there a classic orc even?
Oh, there's so many orcs, Michael. Classic orcs.
All delicious characters to eat.
Now, come here to me. What happens is, Michael, Senshi is actually a bit of an expert, Michael, in this. And what happens is he ends up teaching the party how to cook these things into delicious variations on classic Japanese meals.
This is gas.
So it's very wholesome, Michael. It's very nicely done. It's a very enjoyable... There's a little bit of peril to keep you invested, but overall it's a very wholesome experience to watch. And we get to see the party kind of forge their bonds and make delicious looking meals. I have to say, Michael, in terms of illustrated meals, nom nom nom, 10 out of 10, would eat kelpie steak. Would eat tentacle nudes. Very good.
Yeah. What an odd thing.
It's really, really wonderful. But one of the things I love about it, Michael, is that it posits the idea of the dungeon existing as an ecosystem. So other monsters feed on other monsters, and no one in the party has ever considered this. But Senshi has spent a very long time in the dungeon, and he understands the ecosystem of the dungeon, and he's able to see when things are out of balance because maybe there's a new apex predator, or an apex predator has been killed in another part of the dungeon and has unbalanced the ecosystem. Michael, it's very, very good, very enjoyable. 10 out of 10, would recommend.
Very good. Okay, I might give an episode a watch later when I'm done editing this son of a bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was what I did, Michael. I had wholesome bloody...
So, Benjamin, when she gets killed then, she doesn't go to some sort of afterlife or other world.
Very good, Michael. Very good. Ladies and gentlemen, she doesn't. She gets trapped in that there dungeon. She gets trapped in this world. But, Michael, if you did want to escape to another world, there's probably no better culture to do that in than bloody Ireland.
Tiernanoke!
Tiernan Oak. That'd be a good one to get stuck in fairness. Where you're just constantly young and supple.
You'd love to get stuck into a place where everyone's young and supple. Is that what you're saying?
That's not what I said, Michael, cheeky boots.
It sounds a lot like what you just said.
No, I just want my knees not to hurt anymore, Michael. That's what I want.
Oh, my back.
I want my hip flexors to do their job, is what I want.
Yeah. Have you thought of squatting?
That's what I'd love. I can't squat, Michael. I can't squat. I have old greyhound colloby. That's what they call me, Michael. Fucking no arse whatsoever.
No haunches whatsoever. This is long back colloby.
Long back colloby. That's how I'm referred to in the podcasting circles. Famously originated by Zack Snyder when he murdered my family.
Yeah, that's an awful long back on you.
But come here to me, Michael. We said to ourselves, for Paddy's Day, which is now over, ladies and gentlemen.
Long since.
Recording. we'll take a look at some of the depictions of apocalypses, other worlds and afterlives in bloody Irish folklore and popular culture. There's loads of them, Michael.
Benjamin, now the Irish, grand lads for an old grim fantasy.
We love it. Michael, one of our favourite things is a grim fantasy. Make it grim, says we.
Get it grim, get it horrible. Get dragged under the ground and eaten by fairies.
Yeah. It's great stuff. Great stuff. But come here to me, Michael. There's nothing new in writing about bloody afterlives and apocalypses and purgatories, Michael. We get loads of them. In fact, probably one of the most famous depictions of afterlives is Dante's Inferno and Purgatory.
That's the one with Pierce Brosnan, isn't it? With the volcano that's going to erupt.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Pierce Brosnan just screaming at ghosts saying, maybe you shouldn't be dying here.
That's Dante's peak, Michael. And Hesh's.
Ah, very good. But poor L. Pierce got in trouble this week, Michael, for trespassing in Yellowstone National Park. Did you hear about that?
No, did he?
Yeah, he's after getting fined by the American government for going off trail in Yellowstone, which you're not allowed to do. Funnily enough, to take a look at a geothermal wonder.
Oh, very good. Classic Dante's Inferno. Yeah. He probably thought it was going to blow up.
Pierce's Peak is what it's now being referred to in American law, and he's been very apologetic this week. But that's not what I'm here to talk about, Michael. I'm here to talk about that famous medieval depiction of hell in Dante's Inferno. But Michael, did you know,
go on,
that it was very likely influenced by the work of an Irish monk?
The nine circles of hell themselves were influenced by an Irish fella.
Yeah.
Go on.
It's great stuff. So, Michael, it's a medieval text, Michael. It's called The Vision of Tundalus, or Tunugdalus. It's very hard to pronounce because it's a Tunugdalus. Ladies and gentlemen, get in touch with us on the Discord, which is linked below in the description, and tell me how you'd pronounce this. I'm going to go with Tunugdalus from now on.
Tundalus.
Okay, we'll call it Tundalus. I like that. It has a nice ring to it. So The Vision of Tundalus, Michael, it's a pretty significant work in the medieval genre of what is commonly referred to as visionary infernal literature, which is great.
Visionary infernal literature. Here's the thing about hell.
It's good, isn't it? Here's the thing about hell. So it was written shortly after 1149 by a fella called Brother Marcus.
Oh, Brother Marcus, I knew him very well. Grand lad.
I knew him very well. And he was an Irish monk, and he was writing in Regensburg, Germany at the time. And he came up with this Visio Tunugdale, because he wrote it originally in Latin, as you would, Michael.
If your name was Marcus.
For a Christian.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Brother Marcus wrote about that. And what he did was he created a... he created a... essentially what is referred to as an Imram. Text here in Ireland. An Imram story is an otherworldly voyage, Michael, and they're fucking everywhere in Irish mythology, including the aforementioned Tiernan Og.
But Tiernan Og, is Tiernan Og in another world or is it in this world?
No, Tiernan Og is in another world.
Is it?
You have to travel across the sea on a pony.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you go and find yourself in the other world there, Tiernan Og, where your hip flexors are relentlessly supple, Michael.
Very
relentlessly
good.
So.
Fabulous.
So anyway, he wrote this particular text, Michael, and it was inspired by a little bit of Christian theology, but mostly a lot of the myths and legends that old Brother Marcus had grown up with. So essentially, the way I like to think about it, Michael, is Brother Marcus was being told he was a lazy git and he had to write a manuscript if he wanted to stay in Germany. And he went, all right, I'll pen you a tale. I'll pen you a theological masterpiece.
Yeah, don't ask an Irishman to write down a story. Unless you mean it.
Because you'll be stuck. You'll be, oh, Michael, did you hear the... we'll get into it. We'll get into it in a second. Hang on. Oh, my Spotify has just activated, ladies and gentlemen. Very entertaining. It's fun. I had a soundtrack to my little bit of podcasting there. I apologise. I tapped my earphone in just the wrong place. Great stuff.
I'm kind of leaving you there to spin your wheel. I'm going to edit that out.
Yeah. I hate you. I hate you very much. Right. So when we look at this, Michael, what's happening in this essentially is that there's a knight.
Oh, yeah.
They love a knight back in 1149, Michael.
Oh, a knight. It's not night time, you mean?
No. It's a knight with a K.
Oh, right. A knight. Yes. Go on. What's he doing?
Yeah. So... well, Michael, he's only going and being a knight. He's been all chivalrous, knocking about the place, having a great time, Michael.
Is he slaying any sort of beasts?
He's not slaying beasts, but he's upholding chivalry about the town. But, Michael, wouldn't you know it, he's fallen prey to a bit of pride.
Oh, go on.
It's no good. So, on his journeys, he finds himself in Cork, Michael, of all places.
The first circle of hell, famously.
So, Michael, I would like it here established that the first circle of hell is in fact Cork,
yeah,
in 1148. And Dante's interpretation of hell is just a depiction of Cork in a medieval manuscript.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Great stuff all together. So what happens is this fella goes down to Cork, right? And he's a proud and easygoing fella, Michael. And unfortunately for him, he gets into a bit of a scuffle and he ends up unconscious for 3 days, right?
Who hasn't that happened to in Cork?
Certainly, I would say that our good friend Killian Murphy probably found himself unconscious in Cork for 3 days post-Oscars. So who knows what he saw down there? Who knows what he saw down there? But anyway, so here, come here to me. This fella goes along, right? And he is he's there, and then an angel comes along and he says, oh, what are you doing down on the ground? Come here to me, and I show you hell. Come on, come with me.
Come here, give you, have a look at this. And have a propaganda.
As you do when you're, you know, down and out in Cork, you go, oh yeah, go on, sure, she gives a look. And so he gets guided through heaven and hell. And he gets to see some of the torments of the damned. He gets to go around the mouth of hell.
Cove.
And, of course, this is Tunnig Dalas, which is a very Cork name when you think about it. So you have to say it with a bit of a schneer to it.
Oh, go on.
Tunnig Dalas is how you'd say it. So Tunnig Dalas is told to, you know, pretty much cop a look at that there now. Write it all down. And when you get back up there, go to all your proud and easygoing friends and you let them know that's what's waiting for them if they act the bollocks.
And what sort of bollocksology was going on in the hell of Tunnig Dalas, Ben?
So one of the things that Tunnig Dalas has to take on, Michael, is he gets chewed up by a giant hell beast, Michael. He gets swallowed by a giant wolf. Very rough stuff. Very rough stuff indeed. He gets chewed up, and while he's in there, he meets the souls of lots of terrible people, including some noted lords and ladies of the time, Michael, and a little bit of satirical barbing.
A bit of classic. It's the equivalent of meeting Donald Trump.
See, exactly. He's in there and he's like, I've been in many wolves' mouths. This is the best wolves' mouth because I'm here. I know about it. I've done it. It's all the way down here. I came down here specifically. This was always my intention. Sorry, not my best Trump, I have to say.
That was a bit off the cuff. A bit not great. Yeah.
I got caught out there. I'm really going to have to start scheduling these a little bit more because Mick will put me on the spot and keep lashing out noted celebrities.
It's
anyway,
like if you
he
were,
goes down there.
It's like you're down in hell and you met Vladimir Putin.
Good old Vladdy Putes. I'm not doing it. Get out of here.
Go on.
So much trouble. I always wanted to be here. I voted to be here. This is where I am. Very good.
Vladimir Putin wouldn't speak English, Ben. He would insist on speaking Russian.
He probably would, yeah. Yeah, yeah, he probably would. But anyway, El Tunigdal is, anyway, he survives his encounter in hell, Michael, and he gets lashed back up there. And he spends the rest of his days, in fairness to him, going around Ireland telling everybody, give up your old pagan ways now, boys. Give up your old pagan ways. Or you'll end up down there being chewed on by a big old dog. It's no fucking good.
And does that work?
No fucking good. I mean, they say it does in the text, but they would, because it's religious propaganda.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah. But anyway, that's a mad, mad thing altogether. So that apparently went on to kind of influence good old Dante and give him a little bit of a flavour for what he was going to be handling down the way. But yeah, so it got a whole bunch of... It became a hit text, essentially, Michael, and garnered a whole bunch of translations across the medieval world, Michael. So there's an English version of it called The Vision of Tundale.
Because they're not going to try and say medieval period.
It is. It's a hit. And that's it. There's a version of it in Middle English, Michael. It's kind of a long form poem, and it's called The Vision of Tundale. And it's, you know, it's a rhyming kind of fun version of this story. There's another one called in French called The Visions du Chevalier Tundale, which is very fancy, isn't it?
Yeah, very sexy. I mean, it's just French, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just French.
It's just French. It's just the same thing, but in French, but that's inherently sexier.
Yeah, inherently sexier, simply because it is. Yeah. And there's a German and Dutch version called Visio Tunigdali, which we've already had. And that was illustrated in a bunch of woodcuts that became very popular and reproduced across the time.
Oh, like...
So there you go.
Like the Spider-Man of the Middle Ages.
Yeah, and then, Michael, probably one of the most famous adaptations of it came much, much later from none other than Hieronymus Bosch.
Old H.G. Bosch himself, what was he up to? Was he doing a big painting?
He paints all those mad murals of hell, Michael. The ones that do actually look a bit hellish. Not like fire and brimstone, but, oh, look at that ugly, buggly demon boy chewing on my toes. Oh, I don't like that. But apparently one of them, Michael, is based directly on this text.
And this was an Irish fellow who wrote this.
Brother Marcus.
Brother Marcus. What was his Irish name? Because Marcus surely wasn't his real name.
We don't actually know, Michael. Unfortunately, that's all we have is Brother Marcus. And we know he was from Ireland. And we know he said it in Cork, of all places.
So he was probably in Cork himself, I imagine.
It is essentially, Michael, a shout out to the lads back in Cork. Oh, I just want to say how are you to the boys back in Cork. Here you are. This is Visio Tunigdale. For the lads that know, they know down in Mallow. Lads in Mallow know.
Ben, I can't find anything about this on the internet. I've been looking. Spell it for us.
Oh, that's sad, Michael.
Spell it for me and the listeners, so they can look it up. Don't spell vision, you son of a bitch.
It's Visio. Visio.
Okay, right. Yeah.
Tunigdali. Tunigdali.
Oh, there it is.
There it is.
Very
it's all over
exciting.
The place, Michael. Yeah.
An Irish fella. That's great.
Yeah. So there you go, Michael. But as I said to you, that takes place in a very, very established Irish tradition called the Imram.
What's an Imram? You keep saying Imram as if we're supposed to know what it is.
Well, if you were going to really give it a go, Michael, you'd call it a Yumruv.
Oh.
Or an Umrav,
okay,
right,
on, yeah.
In Gaelic. But we can call it an Imram in the anglicisation form, which is an old Irish tale concerning a hero's journey, a sea journey to the other world.
Tiernan Og.
For example, Tiernan Og.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, these were generally, Michael, a Christianisation of pagan mythology.
Well, because the old Irish fellas, Ben, they weren't keen on writing things down. So... Every bit of old Irish mythology eventually got bastardised into, and then St. Patrick showed up and fixed everything.
Absolutely.
So don't.
St. Paddy came along, waved his shtick, spoke to the big bearded sky daddy, and sorted it out.
So don't you worry yourself about any of those monsters and stuff. As long as you believe in the old Christians, they can't get you.
Sky daddy took care of it. You just rest easy. And that's what it was. But the Imrams were pretty popular, as you can imagine, Michael, because there wasn't any telly back then. No Netflix, no Rebel Moon Part 2 to get you through the cold winter
what
nights.
What would you watch?
What would you watch, Michael? So, These were the kind of Christianization of old pagan stories. One of the most famous being Tirnan an Og, which was Niamh Kinnor, or Niamh of the Golden Hair, or the Golden Head. And she came along and found Oisin, and she took him all over to the lovely kind of world of Tirnan an Og. And he wasn't happy, Michael. Like any good Irishman, he went off gallivanting one evening, and he turned into an elflet and died.
Benjamin, why did he leave Tirnan an Og? Because Niamh came over and was like, hello, I'm a big ride. Do you want to come with me and be young forever? And he was like, ah, yes, yeah, sounds grand, yeah. Just hop up on the old donkey Oisin there.
So I'll frame this in a more modern Irish way.
Frame it for modern audiences, Ben.
For modern audiences. So Oisin is coming along, and he goes out in the night in the town to Copperface Jack's, right?
Oh yeah, go on. Yep.
Yeah. And what happens is Copperface Jack's, or what's the other place that everybody loves, Michael? What's that other
Dicey's
popular
Garden,
spot up the town? Dicey's Garden. That's
but
the
look,
one, Michael.
This goes to show you that neither of us have been in a club in nearly a decade.
I'd say more for me, but anyway, come here.
Yes.
Oisin goes, right? And he's hanging out with the lads, and the lads all play for a local GA team called the Fianna, right?
Oh, yeah. They
which
sound
is
good.
A pretty lethal army of lads on the GA pitch and off, right? And he's pretty popular. Oisin's the one that they all kind of love. He's the captain of the team, more or less, right? And what happens is he's in there in Dicey's, and he's having a great old time. And he meets this absolute vision of a young one, Michael.
Oh, yeah, Niamh.
And Niamh says to him, "Ah, Jesus, you're a big ride." And Oisin goes, "Well, Jesus, look who's talking, because you're some fucking ride, right?"
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ben's revealing a lot about his love language here, ladies and gentlemen. But if anyone has designs on seducing Ben, just start taking notes now. Right, go on.
Please don't. I'm too old. My hip flexors don't even work anymore.
Yeah.
But come here to me. So Niamh says to him, "This is very loud in here. Come on, we get a drink somewhere else." And off they go. And Niamh and Oisin essentially strike up a relationship. And the poor lads from the GA team don't see Oisin for months at a time, right? Oisin goes off and he gets introduced to this whole new world of Sunday markets and, you know, casual wine tastings of an evening dating. You know, the Milano's pizza voucher that we got for Christmas from your Auntie Maureen and we have to see out, you know.
Every time the lads see Oisin, they all go, whoosh, whoosh, whoosh.
Yeah, essentially, right?
Yeah.
So what happens is the lads don't see Oisin from one end of the year to the other. No. But Michael, come Christmas, Oisin does be sitting there in his brand new flat chair with Niamh and he goes, do you know what, love? I might go out with the lads.
Yeah.
You know, because it's coming up to Christmas and the 12 pubs is on.
Yeah, Sean's
and
after...
Niamh doesn't like this.
Sean's after texting me, what happened to bros before hoes?
Sean's after texting me that. And Jack's back from Australia for the for Christmas.
Now you remember Jack. Now he's single now, they broke up.
So he says, right, I'm off to go have a time, right? And Niamh doesn't like this. Niamh isn't too happy because the lads are kind of a bit shite, right? Yeah.
And Niamh's from Dublin 4, right?
And Niamh's from Dublin 4 in this variation. Yeah. And so Niamh is like, I mean, you can go out, but you can't drink too much.
Yeah, because we're meeting my parents in Avoca at 12.
for Christmas lunch. But anyway, in this world, Michael, Niamh turns around to Oisin and says, I'll let you go back from this land of milk and honey, but you're not to get off the fucking horse.
Right. Don't even get out of the taxi. Just wave at Sean.
Just wave at Sean. Give the lads proof of life. I'm going to call it a day. So Oisin is delighted. He goes off and he heads over. Now, Oisin, the daft bastard, goes out and he says, right, I'll just stay in the taxi. I'll wave from the taxi and he'll take me back to Tirnan an Og and it'll be grand, right? Terran Uir is what it is in modern English. Tirnan an Og, Terran Uir, it's all the same. But come here to me. He sees one of the lads fall over on the pavement.
Oh no, what's happened to him?
And one of the lads drops his wallet out and he goes, well, I'm going to have to give the lads a hand. So he gets out of the taxi and he goes over and he helps his old pals up. But then he realises, these aren't my old pals. They just look like my old pals because they're wearing GA jerseys.
Right.
And then he says to your man, as he's down in front of him, and he goes, here, have you seen Jack or have you seen Sean? And the two lads look up at him and go, oh, Jesus, do you mean Jacko and Shano, who used to play for the Fianna Gael team? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, oh, they haven't played Gael in years. And it turns out, Michael, that time moves an awful lot faster in the other world than it does over here in good old Ireland town. And poor old Oisin has been in Tiernanogue for nearly a century, Michael.
Oh my gosh, his friends are all dead or have kids.
His friends are all dead or have kids. And really, at this point, Michael, what's the difference? Huh?
What's the difference? Well, that was the joke. But come here to me. That was the joke I was going for. I don't think that needed to be explained. But go on.
Michael, they call me Longback Colopy or Needlessly Expositional Colopy. Those are my nicknames. But yeah. Come here to me. Anyway, that's the famous story of Niamh Kinnear. And unfortunately, because Oisin jumped out of the taxi a little too soon, he ages about a century in a minute there, Michael.
Oh, that'll finish you off. Oh, yeah.
That'll finish you off.
Something
not
ferocious.
A bother. Yeah, so that's probably one of the most famous examples, Michael, of the classic Imre kind of adventure stories of the old Celtic Christianization genre, which is pretty big.
Go on. Is there any others, or is that us, or are we done?
Say again?
Are there any others, or is that us, or are we done? What's going on?
I'll give you some more, Michael. Do you want some more stories?
Go on, give us another one.
But anyway, sorry. So the Imre are specifically kind of done to show off a hero's faith being tested by pagan oddities and, you know, what you give up. And in fairness, in the story of Tiernanogue, I think the punishment is supposed to be you give up your humanity when you go over to those pagan ways and wiles, you know? But it depends on which way you look at it as you go through. But there are other examples of other worlds existing in a lot of Irish folklore and things like that. One of the big ones is Mag Mel, Michael, or Mag Mial, which is the Gaelic version of it. And it simply means delightful plain.
Oh, go on. That sounds a lot like Tiernanogue.
It's very like Tiernanogue, Michael. In fact, you might say that Tiernanogue is a province within Mag Mial, or Mag Mial.
Oh, really?
If you get it right. Yeah, so it's not really the underworld. And one of the things that sets it apart, Michael, is that it's just referred to as an otherworld. Now, that sets it apart from a lot of older cultures, because generally speaking, when you die in older cultures, it doesn't go very well. If you go to Hades, you are going to suffer for all eternity, unless you died in battle and went to Elysium.
Yeah, go on.
If you died in one of the Scandinavian countries, you went to hell with one L, and she would judge you and keep your soul forever, unless you died in battle, in which case you'd go to Valhalla.
That sounds like the way to go.
But you weren't... Yeah, that would be for you, Michael. Not for me. Absolute hell for me. But it would probably be fine for you. Because you're a bit of a warrior yourself, Michael. Bit of a warrior yourself.
Yeah, like the film
My
Warrior.
My hip flexors... Yeah, my hip flexors don't work because of lack of use. Your hip flexors don't work because somebody kicked you in them.
No, my hip flexors are fine. Look.
Oh, are they?
Oh, yeah, yeah, look at
probably
this.
Probably very... Oh, that's disgusting. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to check out Michael's OnlyFans, where you can see him using his hip flexors to their full potential.
Yeah. I don't have it. I had to cancel it because I was worried about getting sacked by Disney.
Yeah, Disney, we're going to sack him. He's working on X-Men 87. I just didn't want to get that ruined. But come here to me. This particular place, Michael, is a land of pleasure. So when you die, you go to Mag Mial, which is a delightful plain. It's just a nice place to spend time. It was ruled at one point by a Formorian king. Formorian was one of the races that originally settled Ireland. They are a supernatural race in Irish mythology, but they weren't very nice. They were a bit monstrous. But anyway, King Tethra... kind of oversaw that, and his kind of more famous name was, I always get this wrong but I'll try and get it right, Mononon MacLear was his name.
Oh, go on, that sounds a little bit familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, Mononon MacLear is a warrior and king of the Otherworld in Irish and Manx mythology, so lots of the things, and he was often interpreted as kind of the sea god that we had. He was one of the Tuatha Dé Danann, but that'll get us in all kinds of trouble with Irish mythology experts, because the Tuatha De Dananns aren't really gods.
What are they then?
And that's a whole other thing. They're just a race of other people, Michael, that bestowed gifts upon mortals.
Oh.
They're a bit like the Vanir in Norse mythology. They're not deities.
They're just...
In the same way.
They're just a little bit supernatural.
Yeah, they're like the best Ga team in the league. And that's kind of their gig. But anyway, that was a beautiful place where people spent all their time. But the Imrams, Michael, they got thrown around all the time. And there were loads of different stories. Unfortunately, as is common with a lot of Irish mythology, we've lost a whole bunch of them to time. Because they were either over-Christianized.
Go on.
And destroyed. Or they lost all their original kind of meaning, or didn't survive the eradication of the Irish language.
The original Irish language, not the new made up version. Is that what you're contesting?
Not the new made up version of the Irish language. Oh, that'll get us even more trouble.
Yes, it will.
Yeah, fucker.
Yeah, well, I don't know why you said that. Oh. So, Benjamin, here's the thing, though. Yeah. The old Irish, they didn't write stuff down. They didn't like writing things down. They loved telling. They just told the story to their mates, and then their mates told it on again. And then they'd come up with some alpha. They'd pick some weird alpha and go, "Listen, you're the chief remembering fella, so you make sure that you remember Shalicky, all these stories." Sometimes it'd be an L one, like Peg, and they'd say, "Listen, you remember all these stories." And then the Christians came along and said, "We'll write them down for you, but we're going to make them about Jesus or whatever."
Jesus, yes.
Jesus Christ.
Yes, very, very important, Michael. But we have seen more modern versions of this, Michael, and one of the ones that you might... Well, I say modern, not modern by the standards of Copperface Jacks and Dicey's, but modern by the fact of Gulliver's Travels is a very good example of an adapted Imram form.
Gulliver's Travels isn't an ancient Irish story, Ben.
I know, it's a modern Irish story by Jonathan Swift, famous Irish author. However, Gulliver very much travels across the sea to other worlds.
Oh, he does. Is one of them Tiernan Og, I suppose, in a way?
I suppose in a way, maybe. But it was a bit more of an Enlightenment text, Michael, as opposed to a representation of a pagan belief system. But, you know, we do see them all the time. One of the interesting places that we see Imran pop up is in the Darren Shan Demonata books.
Darren Shan Demonata. I understand all of those sounds, but I have no idea what you've just said.
Have you ever read any of the Darren Shan vampire books, Michael?
I have not even heard of it.
Darren Shan would have been a children's author when I was a young fella. And he's an Irish author of horror and fantasy books. Very, very popular. He wrote Cirque du Freak. Was the first one in the Darren Shan series, and that was about the vampire's assistant. I don't know if you remember Larton Crepsley and all that kind of thing.
None of this is ringing a bell whatsoever.
Okay, it was adapted into a movie with John C. Reilly, so it was a real thing. But he also wrote a second kind of IP or series called the Lord Lost books, or the Demonata series. And they were about another world that existed just outside our own, filled with horrific demons. They're very upsetting, Michael. It's a whole vampire and demon... It's a whole werewolf and demon mythology thing. Very worrying. Very worrying stuff. Really scarring to read if you were a young fella. So they were released in 2005 when I was about 15. So naturally I got into them. I had loved the saga of Darren Shan, because that was a multi-million copy selling franchise, Michael. Very, very popular.
Really? How have I never heard of this?
The Demonata one has just been agreed to be adapted to screen. Now whether we see that happen or not is beyond us. But it features a character called Bran. And Bran is essentially a magician. And Bran is loosely based on one of the very famous Imras, which was around the cycle of Bran. It's about a young Irish pagan who makes a voyage to other worlds and faces monstrosities. And he kind of crops up in the Demonata books every once in a while as a kind of simple voyager. It's very, very interesting. It's a really weird adaptation of the Imra, but there you go.
Very good. Very exciting.
Don't you tap your watch at me, you son of a bitch. I know what time it is. Right, come here to me. Ladies and gentlemen, if you or anyone you know has ever been in an Imrie, we'd love to hear about it. Have you ever been to Dicey's or Copperface Jack's? Get in touch with us in a few of the different places to let us know. You can find us on the interwebs at www.seomrabeag.com, S-E-O-M-R-A-B-E-A-G.com.
It means kind of tiny room in Irish.
Sort of a little bit, maybe. You can also find us on our Acast website, www.sherlockshirlistenpodcast.acast.com.
That's kind of the podcast website.
Yep, you can find us on Instagram at sherlockshirlistenpodcast.
That's just Instagram.
Yep, you can find us on TikTok at sherlockshirlistenpodcast.
Just TikTok. It's great, though. Great stuff going on there.
Yeah. Yeah, great stuff going on there. Lots of mini things. We're much more bearable in 1 minute snippets, ladies and gentlemen. So if you'd prefer to listen to us that way, head on over to any of those. But ladies and gentlemen, the best way to get in touch with me and tell me I'm a bollocks is to hop up on the Discord linked down below in the description.
Yeah, hop up on it like it's 1977.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, there's exciting times next week. A Chinese hard speculative fiction series has just dropped on good old-fashioned Netflix. It's called The Three-Body Problem. Mick is absolutely mad for it. Madder than Niamh was for Oisin. And we're going to talk about it next week. So we'll talk to you then.
Has it dropped? No, it's not out yet.
No, it has. It is
out. No, it hasn't. It's out on the 21st. It's out this week.
Okay. Well, we'll be having a look at it anyway. We'll have a look at it and we'll chat about it then. Sure, we'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Talk to you then. Bye-bye. See you next week there now. Top of the morning.
Oh, Vihil came back for the last few minutes.
I'm back for the last couple of minutes.
Awful.